From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
David Culp is a self-professed galanthophile, a lover and passionate longtime collector of snowdrops in all their various incarnations. He's also a host of the annual Galanthus Gala Symposium, which happens the first weekend of March in Downingtown, PA, and virtually online too for those of us who want to join in without even leaving home, as I did last year and will again this time around. I invited him to talk snowdrops today, so more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
David Culp, author of A Year at Brandywine Cottage and also of The Layered Garden, gardens on 2 acres in Downingtown, where among many botanical treasures, he grows more than 200 cultivars of galanthus or snowdrops, proof positive that he is indeed a true galanthophile. I'm so glad to welcome him back to the program today. Hi, Dave, how are you?
Hi, Margaret, I'm fine.
Yeah. Madman, sorry, it's a madman alert. You've got a lot of plants over there,
indeed,
kiddo.
Indeed. I was chuckling. Yes, I am a galanthophile. You know, proud to say, I let my geek flag wave high.
Exactly. So before we get started, I should say that we'll have a giveaway of a copy of your book, A Year at Brandywine Cottage, with the transcript of the show over at awaytogarden.com. And I mentioned in the introduction that you're an organizer of the annual event. I don't know how many years it's been going on, the Galanthus Gala. So just briefly, what is it? And there's some great speakers this year, as always. So tell us just briefly what it is.
Well, for 20 years, I will go over to England for the RHS Winter Show to see hellebores and galanthus. And then I had this great epiphany that planes fly both ways across the Atlantic. Why can't the Europeans and Brits come to us? And so I organized the Galanthus Gala in 2017. And as fate would have it, it snowed that day. So we moved it to my meeting house in Downingtown. It's a 250-year-old Quaker meeting house. I moved it to their schoolhouse. We've had vendors and we have speakers, and it's grown and grown and grown. I had my interest in galanthus. It stemmed from my interest in hellebores, winter gardening in particular. You know, anyone can do a garden in June.
Yes.
It takes something to do it in February or in March, okay? So I thought, well, yeah, we can do this if we just think about what plants are going to be blooming or hardy for us here. You know, I get it. We are not England, but we can have very beautiful winter gardens if we just think about it. But it shouldn't just rest on one genera. You know, as passionate as I am about hellebores, I'm that passionate about galanthus. My hellebore mentor, Elizabeth Strangman, gave me a warning when I first picked up my few pots of galanthus. She goes, oh, David, be careful. These are highly addictive. And, you know, she was right.
Yeah.
She followed with the little caveat, and you have enough addictions, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it happens to the best of us. Although I have to say, I've managed to have a lot of plants, but not a lot of one genus of plants. I don't know why that. I mostly escape that. Different people have different, you know, psychological attachments or whatever. I've got a lot of different plants. But anyway, so some galanthus basics, you know, where are they from? When do they bloom? I mean, how many kinds are there anyway? I mean, how diverse a group is it? I think that I read on your website that the name galanthus comes from the Greek words for G-A-L-A for milk and anthos, A-N-T-H-O-S for flower, milk flower, like it looks like drops of milk and so forth. Where are they from?
They are from, let's see, the Crimean region, mm-hmm. or Northern Turkey.
So Iraq, Balkans and stuff?
Balkans, yeah. Uh-huh. All the way up to Southern Europe, okay? They've migrated. During the Crimean War, the British soldiers would send the snowdrops back to England. They were first recorded in the 1500s in Gerard's herbal book.
Right.
But they are not native. They've since naturalized all around Europe and England.
Okay. And in terms of, you're sort of mid-Atlantic, so you're in Pennsylvania, not far from famous Longwood Gardens and so forth. So when do they bloom for you? Like you have, 200 or something kinds. What's your bloom season, the range of them?
Oh, me, Margaret, I like to take the challenge cup. So my Calanthus started blooming in October.
Okay.
They bloom all the way through the winter. There are hundreds blooming right now. But we're not in peak Calanthus season, mind you. They are earlier this year. Thank you, not thank you, global warming.
Yes.
Ton blooming right now. We're going to have cold weather this week, but they can take it. That's one of the things I like about them. Is they can take the rigors of winter and still keep on blooming. So they go right through the winter all the way till April. And when people, kind of kid me and say, Galanthus, I just stop and go, well, what's blooming in your garden right now? That usually gives me pause. And I can say, well, I have hundreds of Galanthus. And I need chlorophyll in the wintertime. I don't know about you, but I need something green.
Right. So they there are either species or varieties for like a lot of different zones. Like I think on your website again it says like 2 to 9, but the sort of sweet spot is zones 4 to 7-ish or so for these bulbs.
Probably.
Yeah.
My friends up in northern New York, in colder areas, they probably are growing lots of Navalis, Calanthus Navalis, which. Mm-hmm. Which are very popular in Germany and Northern Europe right now. There's a lot of breeding work being done there. So what I like Navalis, I grow a lot of them. They've naturalized here in Southeastern Pennsylvania, New York. They're the one that's naturalized the most in the U.S.
Right.
I also like Elwesii, the Galanthus Elwesii, because it's a larger flower and it blooms earlier. But then there's a whole host of hybrids. Okay, between and other, there's four different basically genera that make up the species Galanthus. But
right.
The bulk of my collection is Navalis, Gracilis, Elwesii, the hybrids. But like any Galanthophile, the truth is you got to have them all, and you soon learn to work with what works with you, okay, and go with those particular species.
Right. Right. So when you were talking about how you've had some blooming since October and there'll be ones blooming through April, you don't mean the same exact flower, of course. You mean this continuing, the succession of this genus, because you've planted different types, you have this succession, this wave, this continuing wave of them. And they're we gardeners who are not galanthophiles yet, we see them in the fall bulb catalogs, I believe. That's when they're sold mostly. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I buy them sometimes when they're dormant bulbs. I also buy them in the green, which we do at the gala. We sell them in the green. That's mm-hmm. a very good time to plant them. The truth is, the best time to get them is when you can get your hands on them, okay? But at the gala, there's lots of different cultivars and species in the green. They are in the family, the Amaryllidaceae family, mm-hmm. that are glazing over. That's important because Amaryllidaceae should automatically go deer-proof. So they're deer-proof. Other thing about the Amaryllis family is that they only put roots out once a year. So if you damage the roots when you're transplanting them, they've lost the ability to take up that much more nutrients. So you're safe when they're dormant, but even better if they're in a container and you buy them in the green.
Okay.
Did I confuse you?
No, I get it. And when we say in the green, we mean that it's up and growing, so to speak. It's a transplant.
Yes.
So I've said repeatedly that you have hundreds of kinds in your garden. Can you remember all the names without a cheat sheet in your hand? I mean, it must just be staggering.
My garden, Brandywine Cottage, is, I used not to label anything. The only thing labeled in my garden is my Galanthus collection. I don't know if I've risen to new heights or sunk to new lows. I do label my Galanthus because I'd be lost without them, okay?
Yeah.
An unlabeled Galanthus, if you don't know what it is just a pretty Galanthus. And that's okay, but that's okay. But, you know, if you're a serious collector of anything, whether it be art glass, you know, you got to know the provenance.
Yes. So, you know, I look at the lists from collectors who sell them or, you know, some of the sources for the galanthophiles would shop at, not your basic mail order bulb catalog, you know, mass market bulb catalog, which has a few kinds. And I see some, you know, for $30, which I assume is for a bulb, and some for close to $500 for a bulb. And so there, some of them are really, really, really expensive. And so if I splurge on even a $30 bulb, if I splurge on one, what happens? What is that little creature doing? How long how does it multiply? Does it multiply only underground? Do they self-sow? What's their method of becoming more than one in my garden?
Well, both.
Okay.
And I've confessed that I've paid maybe way too much for a single bulb of Galanthus. It's kind of like tulip mania right now.
Yes.
They fetch huge prices from $1,400 down to $30. And I offer, you know, just basic Elwesii in the pot to the very expensive ones at my table. And at the gala, you'll see them all price ranges. You know, you buy what you're willing to gamble and plant in the ground. And people laugh and say, well, you paid that much for a bulb. And I said, well, how's your 401k done? My investment in that bulb usually doubles within 1 year.
Oh.
So you can expect that to probably double within a year, maybe two at the most. But if it's damaged, the roots are damaged, it may take another year for it to pick up its stalks and bloom for you. But it reliably, you know, increases very slowly and makes a large clump.
Okay.
And it does self-seed. I'm afraid I'll never have a really tidy garden again because I let my Galanthus, hoping that they'll seed around. And you can't, you know, mulch over. I don't mulch anyhow. I use leaf mold on my garden. But they will self-sow around and you get some interesting hybrids. When you have this many cultivars intermingling and having wine and doing what in the middle of the night, you're going to have some interesting hybrids.
So they're not just botanical Bitcoin, they're also sexy creatures.
Yes, they are.
So you're known, and I mentioned earlier, you know, in the introduction that one of your books that you've written is called The Layered Garden. And so you're known kind of design-wise as a proponent of the technique of layering plants, not just sticking one thing here and one thing there and so forth, and having this sort of succession and complexity of beauty in the garden unfolding. And how do Galanthus fit into that strategy? So where do they go and where do they belong in the garden?
Well, they start the year. That's why we have the gala in mm-hmm. March. It's kind of like the kickoff of spring, okay? As soon as my garden starts blooming with the Galanthus and the Crocus thomasiana and the hellebores, it's spring. I don't go by the exact calendar. I let my garden tell me what season it is. I watch it. So my garden starts blooming here in zone. I think we're still, who knows, 6B or 7. Again, the global warming factor makes it hard. We haven't had snow here in Philadelphia in 2 years. We're expecting our first measurable snowfall tomorrow.
Yes, I saw that in the paper, yes.
But they start now, you know. It's a seasonal layer. To your point about collecting, I kind of stage my garden. You know, it's Galanthus, hellebore time, then into Narcissus, then into tulip. There's a basic genera that goes throughout the year. So you're doing succession planting by genus.
Right.
As well as spatial layering. You know, it's trees, shrubs, ground layer. You're mm-hmm. addressing all those layers in the garden.
Do Galanthus do better with more or less light, or what are some of the good sort of niches within the garden, you know, light wise and otherwise, other condition wise, that they like?
Did you with shade is preferred. Mm-hmm. You can push them more towards full sun. You might want to give them a little bit of shade in the summertime. A lot of the species that are more southerly in their distribution actually like more sun. I would say like Regina Olgae, which is named after the Queen of Greece. She needs more sun. That genus needs more sun because it's native to Greece.
I see.
So I have them in full sun. What Galanthus tend not to like is overly moist soils, like soggy soils. The one that's probably the more tolerant of moisture retentive, I'm saying tolerant, not proof, might be Nivalis, but I would stay away from overly wet, boggy soils when it comes to Galanthus.
I think bulbs in general, and not all, but most, I feel that way, that they don't want to be in like a sump, you know?
They don't.
Yeah. If I had a good size group of something, like the only ones I really have are the two most familiar that you mentioned. And even here in what used to be Zone 5B until the other day when they announced that it was 6A, with the unusually mild winter we had until this week, they were starting to come up under the leaf litter. You know, they were starting to push, and even neighbors had a couple flowers here and there. If I get a good sized clump, do I move it? And I want to say divide them and put some elsewhere. Do I do it when they're quote in the green? Do I do it when they're up and running? Is there a good time?
I do. You know, I'm a bit pragmatic. The optimal time is when they start going dormant. Okay.
When
they start to yellow. But the truth is, Margaret, I do it when they're in the full green. And I usually, I'm always in a hurry. So I'm going to take a clump, maybe a sizable clump, and I divide it in thirds. I divide it, leave one clump where it was. I put two other clumps elsewhere. I immediately, no matter if it's raining out, you want to water it in to make sure that the soil has contact with the roots.
Okay.
That's important. But, it's kind of like insurance, too. If something happens to one clump, you still have two more elsewhere. If you just have one clump that's prized and that clump, for some reason, disappears, I think dividing not only gives you more for the garden, but also serves as a kind of insurance that you still have your prized bulbs available.
Right. I was looking through your list. You have a list of ones that you, as you said, that, they were turn out to be a good investment because you can also sell some. And as you get more of certain ones, and there were some familiar names. You just mentioned one that was named for a Greek queen or something, but I saw that there was one that you recommend, and it wasn't a super expensive one. It's called Bertram Anderson. And it's funny because in the years that I've grown plants, I've had two other plants named for Bertram Anderson, a pulmonaria and a sedum. So he must have been some great gardener, Bertram Anderson.
What happens, once a snowdrop's named after you or a person, anyone, that person becomes an immortal.
Uh-huh.
So you're immortal after there are snowdrops named after you. Bertram Anderson was a great gardener. And I love the different names of snowdrops. That's part of the lure of snowdrop, of being a galanthophyte, is who it's named after, the garden that it came from, the Providence. That's part of the history. That's important to me.
Well, it was fun. As I said, looking at the list, it's like, ooh, I just want to find out who all those people and all those places that all the varieties are named for, because you'd get this whole rich history by doing that, working backwards from that list of named cultivars of Galanthus. You'd get this whole history of of our obsession with gardening over the centuries. You know, it's and I think he was in like the Cotswolds region, right? For Trim Anderson.
That's a big area of galanthophiles. Okay. That's
yes.
There's a lot of them in the Cotswolds. You know, they're basically a 2-hour, I hesitate to say that because they're spread everywhere. But usually when I go over, it's within a 2-hour push outside of London. But they're great galanthophiles in Ireland. They have galanthus shows and sells in Germany, in Belgium. I mean, it's sweeping Europe right now.
Mm-hmm. So in all of these varieties, what are just, I know it's hard to, I feel like I have to get down on the ground and crawl around and look closely at them, because these are not up in your face kind of, or it's not as big as a knee-high red tulip or something, right? You have to really look closely at the subtleties, but some of them are sort of more frilly, like almost double, I guess, the flowers, and some have more green edging. And are those the differences? What are you looking at when as a collector to add to your collection?
Well, I don't know of a genus that is, one of the things that appeals to me about snowdrop are their utter simplicity, okay? But then again, I don't know of a genus that is so highly nuanced. It's about, you know, how long the claw is, how they taper at the end, how the green tips, how the shading is it a blotch? Is it striped? It's all about these subtleties.
Yeah. And
your eye, once it is trained to look at subtleties, whether it be galanthus or any other plant in the garden, you become a better gardener as you start looking at subtleties. That being said, I've seen gardens just have one genus, like Painswick in England, which is all one, I think, Nivalis. And that's very popular and very effective landscape. But it's looking at those details that sharpens your eye. And the other thing about galanthus is it's a time you can gather with friends, like at the gala, and not have any guilt feelings about leaving your garden because nothing else is going on. You can actually talk with fellow gardeners at that time of the year. It's kind of a gardener's sport, if you will.
Uh-huh. So let's talk about the gala. So I mean, I was excited to see that you're having, I mean, you have presenters, people who do kind of talks. And again, they're going to be broadcast virtually also, so people can buy, as I did, a virtual ticket, as well as attend in person in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. But like Nancy Goodwin, you know, one of the, I mean, I remember a million years ago, the first time I went to her garden, you know, in her southeastern garden, and just the astonishment of what she had accomplished. So, you know, there are some really great speakers. So tell us a little bit about what's going to go on, whether in person or virtually at the gala.
We start Friday with the virtual happy hour. It's kind of, you know, being a social activity is part of being a galanthophile. There's a social aspect to it. So we have a trivia game, which is great fun. I'll tell you a little secret, because it's 5 years, it's 5 hours. We're ahead of England 5 hours. So they've always gone through cocktail time by the time we have the happy hour.
Oh.
And you can see it sometimes in their responses, which is great fun, okay? We have the happy hour, and we have Nancy Goodwin speaking, and I'm just honored to introduce her. She's, as you said, an iconic garden in the South. A lot of gardeners in the South think that galanthus aren't hardy for them because it's too warm. Well, I just want to point to Nancy Goodwin, who's been doing galanthus in her garden for 30 years. She has she's known right now with her galanthus collection for having the winter walk. She has a lot of fall blooming galanthus in her garden. But I just wanted to have her speak because she's such a good gardener and has been doing galanthus and helped dispel that myth that you can't grow them in the South. Actually, I have a busload coming from Tennessee to the gala this year.
Oh, great.
So they've been coming several years. We have several busloads coming to the gala. We have then on Saturday, we have the curator of Utrecht Gardens speaking on DNA tracing in snowdrops to make sure that how the galanthus have moved from the Mediterranean upwards through Europe. And so they're actually doing DNA tracing to make sure they have the right cultivars and species in the garden, that they're historically correct as well. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That we've moved in that direction, not just in Galanthus, but plant-wise. I think DNA tracing is going to change the way Linnaean nomenclature is today. And then we have the director of the Botanic Gardens in Sweden, which is the largest bulb collection in the world.
Wow.
Not just the United States. But he's going to be talking about his love of Galanthus. And more importantly, I think, just as importantly, are the companion plants, the companion bulbs to bloom with them.
Yes.
It's not just one genus. It's about making a garden, Margaret.
Speaking of layering.
It's about making a garden. What goes,
yes,
with, what goes with that plant? Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, David Culp, we're running down. We're almost basically out of time, but I just want to remind people we're going to have a giveaway of your one of your books with the transcript of the show over on A Way to Garden. And I'm going to give all the information about virtually or in-person attending the Galanthus Gala in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, the first weekend of March. And I'm just always, I always have fun, as people could tell, because I was cackling throughout talking to you. Another a fellow plant nut of a longtime plant nut like me. So thank you so much. And I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Margaret. I look forward to seeing you soon and everyone
yes.
at the gala. Happy gardening.
Same to you. And same to all the rest of you. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, as David said, meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.